Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is a show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a recipe or a question, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about value systems. Yes, and of course we all have them, and we have to be aware of the value systems that other people have too, because it influences everything we do. And we announced the topic kind of early, and people asked what we consider to be a value system. So let's talk about that first. What's a value system within our context, within life context, come to think of it, but within our context of a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, anything where people have to get together and reach a successful, workable outcome. So what is a value system? I like this definition. Muhammad says that a value system is foundational beliefs in how the world is or should be. Foundational beliefs in how the world is or should be. Nicely done. Well, you guys have been thinking about this. Lee says it's a guide for daily living that influences all aspects of thoughts and responses. Right? Yeah. A guide for daily living that influences all aspects of thoughts and responses. Yeah, I think of it also as a choice between various alternatives. The one that you choose, oftentimes has to do with your value system, right? And whether or not it's inclusive in your value system, whether or not it's something that you can feel comfortable with, right? Yeah. So your value system is often shows when you have alternatives and you have to choose, well, at least one, but you have to act upon the alternatives. And you have to decide, well, how is this going to work and how would I feel comfortable with it, right? Yeah. Well, thank you all for all of your participation. We have people calling a value system goals, hopes, attitude. I like that, attitude. Your value system is your attitude towards life. Opinions, yeah, because it's what you think of stuff. Convictions, which is kind of strong opinions. Ooh, some of you are going for fancy. How about behavioral influencers, right? Yeah. So your value system is what's core to your belief system, core to your, well, to your behavior, too, to what you act upon, and a fundamental belief in how the world is or should be, like Muhammad says. Yes. So your value system is important, and it is something that you need to really think about and think about the value system of others that we're dealing with. So now that we've decided that we've got value systems, and we'll talk about them more in depth, the other big topic that we're going to be covering this time is what differing value systems do we often deal with within our context? Yeah, what kind of value systems do we see and kind of, well, make people act differently than each other? And you have to accommodate that. You have to think about it, right? Yeah. Oh, I'm going to go for this. The importance of economic gain, right? Some people really put a lot of importance in economic gain, and some not so much, right? the importance of economic gain, of whether or not this is going to be financially good for us, is a value system call, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Closely following that is some people thinking about social importance, social gain. Not necessarily not economic also. They're not necessarily exclusionary. Because people think of it as, well, I'm interested in money or I'm interested in the good of society. But sometimes there's money in the good of society. It's just that you make an economic decision that has social justice to it as opposed to a different alternative, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go for religious value systems, moral religious ones. They give us kind of preconceived notions about how the world should be. Yeah, I personally buy into a value system that underlies what I think about morality. Yeah, I'm a Christian, right? And that influences what I think of as moral. And I admit this completely. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go for success-driven as a value system because success and economic are not exactly the same thing as a priority, right? Because success can be a stepping stone. You can volunteer for something that will enhance your reputation and make you more successful, possibly economically, in the future, right? Yeah. But success also has to do with power, right? Yeah. This one's very good too. A lot of people are talking about what I'm going to call peer pressure. That your value system is influenced by the company you keep, by the people who are of importance to you and what they think. And so peer pressure is very impactful to a value system. What are the people that you really respect and want to have respect you think about this? Think about what we're doing, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go for a value system being kind of a comfort zone too, how the world should be, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are talking about what to do about it when you've got differing value systems. And the main thing to do is to practice empathy. And remember that empathy is careful listening, and it is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what is a value system, fundamental beliefs. You know, I think this is actually true. Lee and others are saying that if you've got fundamental beliefs like that and it's your value system, you kind of think they're facts and not opinions. And then other people who don't share your belief system, your value system, think they're opinions because they don't jive with their what they think of as facts, right? Yeah. So one person's facts about how the world is or should be is another person's opinion. And kind of not a fact, maybe even not even a truth, right? Because truth is subject to opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, and I think that's actually this is a quote that goes around and is heard from different sources and like that, but it's a really good one, and a lot of people are bringing it up. One person's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist. Depends which side you're on, right? Depends which team you're playing for. Yeah. And that's always true and always a good point that one person's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist. Yeah. And it is a matter of perspective and a matter of foundational belief and value system. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing about what is a value system and the fundamental beliefs is sometimes they need to be modified so that we can reach a workable outcome. Sometimes they need to be modified. And in order to do that, we're going to look at all sides. We're going to research everything because your value system, everybody's value system, not just yours, value systems are comfort zones. They tell us how the world works, right? Yeah. They are fundamental ideas from which we live our lives. Somebody called it a guide, right? A daily guide for how to react. And in order to modify that, in order to change it, in order to say, oh, let's think about this and let's do something slightly different, or maybe lots different, you have to give people a really good reason. Yeah. Not just say because I think this way is better. No. You have to really have a reason. Now, sometimes value systems do change. Circumstances change. Society changes. Our opinions of what is moral and what is not moral change, right? Yeah. Yes. Jean and others are saying that that's generational, that the next generation will have a different, slightly different value system than the last, especially in today's changing world. And especially in today's world where it used to be if you had a value system, it kind of came down through your family, through your heritage, right? Your basic core character value system. But now you can learn about other people's value systems and see about adopting them and join different groups, right? Sorry, went to open a water bottle. Hang on a second. Sorry. And that is inherently a new thing because you've got the internet. And you can pretty much join any kind of group that pretty much appeals to you. And people do change their value systems, change their ideas as they mature. So to a certain extent, change is generational. But we need people to understand if it's a good thing and we need to modify too, right? Yeah, think about your value system. Think about where you started, how you got it, right? And whether or not you have modified over the years in order to have a more successful life, a more workable outcomes, right? In order to deal with other people. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to talk about being a guide to daily living. And yes, Jasmine and others are saying it's an idealized way of life, like perfection. Your value system is kind of idealized. And nobody can actually meet perfection because humans aren't perfect. I mean, some of you are possibly more perfect than some of us, but no, nobody's perfect, right? And therefore, this idealized value system, this idealized how we should live, needs to be, well, acceptable in real life, needs to be usable, right? Yeah. So you get a pattern of thoughts and ideas, but you need to have an open mind. And you need to explain this to people because people really like their comfort zone. That's why it's called a comfort zone. They really cling to their value system. And maybe it's a really good idea because it makes us people that can deal with other people. And we're not going to just, shoot somebody. But you have to think about patterns of thoughts and ideas and be open-minded to new thoughts and ideas, which is the key to it, right? To be open-minded to new thoughts and ideas. Mm-hmm. Yes, these are all preconceptions. It's a good point. You have an idea of how the world is or should be, and people do try to kind of squish the situation into that preconception because it gives you a foundational basis. It gives you a guide for daily living, right? Yeah. And there's an overlay of value system oftentimes. Is that a bad thing? Nope, it's not a bad thing at all. But it is a fact that that's what happens, that there is an overlay, and then it is difficult to persuade people otherwise, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And the leader, that would be us, must be a model of not only civility, but of reasonableness, right? And we have to think about our own preconceptions. There will be a time, let's face it, when we really think that one side is, well, kind of more right than the other. Yeah? Hey, that is an unavoidable thing. And what we want to do is we want to know, we want to understand that that's what we're doing. We want to understand that we are the leader and we are a third party impartial, and we are going to not overlay our value system to the detriment of a successful outcome, right? We're going to listen to everybody. That's what empathy is. Mm-hmm. Yes, a model of civility also. This is true sometimes, well, kind of a lot of times. People get kind of heated up about their value systems because they're fundamental to how we live our lives. And they really think if you don't share it, you're not my kind of person, right? And I'm going to show you a better way. This is a sincere offer. I'm going to show you a better way. It is. And then people are very sometimes not as civil as they could be. And you as a leader must be a model of civility. You cannot get people to do something that you yourself do not do. Yes. Even if your fundamental value system as an overlay is kind of not exactly what's being presented. Let's work this through. We got to work together. We're different kinds of people. We come from different kinds of backgrounds, which is how you usually get your value system. We've had different life experiences. Right? Yeah. No. Let's not impose our preconceptions. As leader, we have the third party impartial besides. Right? Right. We're going to practice empathy. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. We'll talk about the civility rules for a minute right here because people are asking about them. The civility rules generally say we will not be rude to one another. And you fill in the blank on that. You flesh it out depending on your circumstance, depending on what's going on, right? Yeah. And the civility rules overlay everything because we're going to act in a respectful manner to our fellow person, right? Yeah. We're going to act in a respectful manner. And it is the fundamental, I actually announce the civility rules. We will not be rude to one another, and we will act in a respectful, civil manner at all times. I flesh them out later if we need to. But the main thing is you need to announce them immediately, even if you don't think that this group is going to go uncivil, because they are basically in agreement with one another. But you never know, and we want to make sure that everybody understands. Yeah, some groups nod their head, and yeah, we got that. And they do. They've got that. Some groups, not so much, right? Yeah. And the civility rules are, you announce them immediately, and you enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly, even if you have to do it 700 times. Yes, thank you. People are asking and saying, tell how you enforce. Sometimes you get people that are inadvertently uncivil because they've gotten excited and their value systems are being questioned, right? Or they're for some other reason. And sometimes you get people who have an agenda. And the agenda is we wish to be disruptors. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just get people who are basically rude. And they like causing people to be unhappy, right? We're not going to allow any of that because that is uncivil. Now you can say, don't do that, right? Yeah, you can say it. And that's nice, but we all know that that's not exactly going to solve the problem because don't do that is not sufficiently effective, right? Right. Don't do that. That's not nice. Play nice. What we're going to do is we are going to ask before we start, before we become the leader, before we take this project on, because after all, our reputation is on the line, and your reputation will not be enhanced with failure, right? Before you start, you must get employer backing. Now, remember on this show, we call whoever it is that had the brains to bring you in as leader the employer. It does not necessarily indicate an employment relationship. The employer is whoever's taking an interest, whoever we kind of report to, right? Yeah. The employer is the one who is powerful enough to have a penalty, right? Because you need an answer to the either openly stated, and I have seen it openly stated more than I care to admit, because my specialty is dealing with groups that, if I have a specialty, groups that have already failed, but for some reason the same participants must still be in the room. There was, for example, there was a certain level of employment, right? There's supervisory. And the prior leader is now a participant, and I've been brought in to fix it because they're not getting anywhere. This prior leader and his or her backers, his or her clique, have an agenda to make it fail again, right? Because it would be better for their reputation to say, well, we failed, we didn't make it. But even Sue couldn't get that settled out. Even Sue couldn't get that to go. Right? Yeah. No. And so they've got an agenda where they want to say that. This is not going to happen because I'm going to have an answer to the either spoken or inherently, you know, or implied. But I'm going to have an answer to the question when I say that is an uncivil activity. We will not be doing that. We will respect each other and act in good faith, right? I have an answer to the question, what you going to do about it? Because that's the question. What you going to do about it? Hey, the answer is something definite and something employer-backed, and something kind of big, right? How about being demoted so that you're not the level that has to be in the room anymore? How'd you like to not be supervisory anymore, right? How about a monetary penalty off your paycheck How about a not being able to participate in something that's really good to participate in, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, if you're going to have a fine, which is a monetary penalty taken out of your paycheck, it has to be a significant enough amount so that it makes a difference. $10 is not it, $10, at least not in the United States, right? Yeah, it has to be substantial. And there has to be a penalty for those who back your obnoxious behavior, right? Because then you won't. Then you'll get peer pressure to not do that anymore. Not funny. Not cool. Not what we do. Right? Right. Yeah. And so it is important to have the answer to the question, what you're going to do about it, and to enforce it. Because everybody's watching. And if you don't really do it, everybody will know that it's just bluffery. It's just talk. And nothing will happen. And not on my watch. I do not allow for just plain ordinary rudeness. I really find it reprehensible, and it will make a non-convivial atmosphere. You will never get anywhere like that. You must have a civil, reasonable atmosphere in order to negotiate, in order to reach consensus, in order to find a workable outcome. And you, my friends, as leader, must be a model of this civility. Yes, people ask me this all the time, and it's a really good question. The question is, what happens if you blow the civility rules? If you, as leader, are no longer a model of civility, things happen, right? Yeah. Yeah. I will assume that you have not done something so egregious that you need to recuse yourself. Yeah, don't stomp out of the room and say something rude, because that's not good for your reputation, and it gets you nowhere except fired or no longer to be leader. And even if you come back, it taints the group dynamic. And beg for you to come back, huh? I've seen that as a ploy, where you threaten to no longer lead it and stomp out and make them beg you to come back. Maybe. Okay. Might be a good negotiation tactic. You better be sure that that's how it's going to work, though. And they are going to beg you to come back. That's tricky. Yeah, that's a judgment call as leader. I'm not fond of it, but you have to be sure that you're the only one that can get this done, and they know it, and that they need you, and that they're going to beg you to come back and be more civil when you do, so that you don't do that again. Leave. Threaten to leave. You know, saying people are impossible. I'm not going to lead you. You can all go jump in the lake. Don't know if that's a good tactic or not. You'll have to judge that under the circumstances. It should not be your first choice, in my opinion. Well, I suppose it depends on you and how integral you are to the process, and whether or not they really do. You cannot be replaced, right? And they know it. Yeah. So, yes, with a great deal of reservation, because, hey, whatever works, but that's complicated, and you have to be sure. Because just stomping off and quitting is not so good. I'm going to assume that you didn't do anything so egregious or say anything so rude that you can't take it back and you need to recuse yourself. I think, and it's been a while since, I don't usually lose my temper like that. I'm fairly even-tempered as a human being, is what it really is. But people do try to deliberately push your buttons just for amusement purposes. And if you do have a bad day and you accidentally lose your civility, I think you should hold yourself up as a bad example, apologize, and go forward, stating that we're now going to have the civility rules in force. Yes, and if there's a fine, you should pay a fine, or whatever it is that's the penalty, because that's only fair, right? You're part of the group. You're the leader, but you're part of the group, and it's a good example, right? Yeah, and people do appreciate it, and they remember that. They remember not that you lost your temper, because that happens, because they goaded you, right? But they remember that you reacted in a really leadership-strong way, yeah? And you brought it back. You brought it back in a way that we all went, yeah, that we understand now that that's how it's done, right? Yeah. Because after all, we are an example of leadership. Uh-huh. And we want to remain that way. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you are a model of civility. Let's talk about our value system making us choose between alternative choices. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point that what you choose is guided by your value system. Sometimes there's different paths. In fact, oftentimes there are. Different ways of looking at something. Different ways of doing something. And you need to really choose. You need to say, well, this is the way that I think is the best. And how do you determine best? Well, probably using your value system, right? Yeah. Probably that's how you determine best. Mm-hmm. And yes, when we have alternate choices, and even if we are kind of in accord on our core value systems, and a lot of times we are. A lot of times I see groups that are having difficulty reaching a workable outcome. But it's not so much that they have differing value systems that far away from each other, but because your personal value system might not even be impacting this so much because it's a business thing, right? I do a lot of corporate. But there's a lot of choices, a lot of paths that could be taken. And this is the juncture. We have to decide what the next step is a lot, right? And then the next step. And the problem is, not that they all seem horrible, usually, but they all seem reasonable. That's kind of a bigger problem. It's not so much that some of them are against our value systems and are evil and done by Satan, but they are all seem like they be reasonable choices. And we have to choose one and go with it because life is like that. A lot of times the circumstances dictate that we have to be decisive in what we're going to do. And what we're going to do is we're going to think about it carefully from all angles, right? We're going to research it. And we're going to research. Well, nowadays researching means the internet, right, a lot. And you can validate pretty much anything on the internet nowadays, even things that are kind of against most people's value systems. Yeah? Yeah. There's always a group that's doing something, well, odd. We'll call it odd, right? Yeah. But what you want to do is look at all sides. And not just stop when you find out one thing and you go, well, that either agrees with us or it doesn't agree with us, let's move on. Let's look at all sides. And what we're going to do is, yes, thank you. We're going to bring in an expert opinion, right? Yeah. I do, if there's budget for it and if it's possible, I do like to actually talk to some experts. It doesn't have to be in the room. Skype exists. They can even be email talks. Although I find that if you actually converse, I mean, nowadays it's easy enough. You used to call it a conference call, but whatever method that you're using on the computer, where you can kind of see each other and hear each other and really ask questions as they come up and hear intonation and things, because email answers are fine, but there's something to be said about the inflection of the human voice and to look at somebody and see their reactions, right? Yeah. And I do indeed think that that has value, see their body language and like that. But we need to ask some experts their opinion. And I really, Recipe for Peace Now, really advocates competing experts, more than one. Let's ask people how come their opinion is so different than the opinion of that expert, right? Yeah. How come we've got this difference? How come we need to think about this better? How come we are, well, we're working on it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what you choose is guided by your value system. But what you learn is important, too. Yes. The question is being asked, who do I usually choose as an expert? Personally speaking, I like someone who's actually done it, actually in the field, actually in the trenches. I am less impressed by credentials, actual paper credentials, than I am by we did it, I actually think failure is an excellent credential because people are still interested and they want to know if it can be done. They're still interested in seeing success in whatever topic it is. And we'd like to know how come they think it didn't work so we don't reinvent the wheel, which is a good thing too, right? Yeah. So I think the people who have failed are interesting experts because sometimes they tell you what went wrong a lot of times, but they have an opinion about it. And sometimes something that failed in the past, circumstances have changed. Even societal circumstances change, right? Yeah. But I think they make interesting experts, and a lot of times they're still interested in having it work, in having success. And they've got a real good, valid opinion. Mm-hmm. Media and employer, remember it's a generic term, are often very impressed by actual credentials. Actual, this piece of paper shows that I know something type credentials. Yeah? And so that's to be taken into account too. Because always remember that the media, and nowadays that impact that encompasses all kinds of things, social media, regular media, everything in between, the media influences public opinion, right? Which is why we're going to have a media spokesperson if the media is taking an interest, because sometimes we're doing something that has kind of broad public interest, or even narrow public interest, but somebody's interested. And also, we have a rule that we will not blog, Facebook, Instagram, whatever on earth it is that people are using now, about the process, about what we're doing, about what somebody said while we're frickin' doing it, right? Yeah. because, first of all, we're in the process. Second of all, as I've just explained, because I like to see my experts in the flesh, so to speak, they have to be in the room, but I like to be able to talk to them and see them. What you write down can be misinterpreted because there's no inflection to it. Also, it's in writing, people. It's on the internet. It lasts forever, right? Yeah. And then the opposition, the media, somebody takes what you wrote and takes it out of context or takes a little snippet of it, right? Yes. And then misquotes you. And you're like, I didn't say that. And they're like, yes, you did. It's right there in writing. And you went, well, yeah, but it's got 7 sentences in front of it and 4 behind. You're like, well, that's what you said. It's in writing, right? Mm-hmm. No, don't do that. So we're going to have a media blackout unless our media spokesperson, who's been specially chosen to deal with the media and public opinion, is doing it. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about differing value systems, or we're going to run out of time, because that happens to us sometimes. How about the one about economic gain? A lot of times people have a profit agenda. It's not a sin. A lot of times the employer has a profit agenda. A lot of times they're beholden to someone who has a profit agenda. How about shareholders, right? Investors, partners, whatever it is, but somebody has a value system that is monetary driven, right? Well, I suppose it's a clear goal, and it's common, and it's not a bad thing necessarily, because it's very objective driven, very goal driven. It has to be clear, but sometimes the value system is we want to make as much money as we can. Hey, see, a lot of you are going, that's not a value system. Yes, it is. It's just not your value system. And quite frankly, and I mean this in the nicest way, and I'm not saying this against anybody, because a lot of you had kind of a knee-jerk reaction to the idea of economic gain as being a value system. But we consider it within our value systems too. It may not be primary, but it, as in the ends justify the means. Ever hear that expression? I don't think it's even an Americanism. It's just the age-old expression. There are lots of people for whom the ends justify the means. They don't care how they get there. They want to make a lot of money. Okay. That's a value system. And it needs to be taken into account. You need to understand that. You need to understand that sometimes that is the value system. Right? Yeah. What I value is money, so I can buy a yacht, right? And I can have the biggest toys. Now, I don't know if this is an Americanism or not, but it is an expression, he who dies with the most toys wins. People like stuff, and their goal is to have bigger stuff than anybody else. That's a value system. And you have to know that. That's their primary value system. And a moral underlying value system has been made secondary to the primary of making money, right? Yeah. Yes, we will not get into the type of people that do this, but there are indeed lots of people who have no objection to doing something that many people would find on their value system to be against their moral or social value system, but they have no. But their value system is monetary, and a lot of times, the profit agenda like that also goes with a power agenda. I want to have the most and be the most in charge, right? I want to be powerful over other people, over the business, whatever. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's oftentimes an overlay of power also. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because if your ends justify the means, that's a way of getting power. You got to admit this. It's a way of getting power. It's a way of getting ahead, of succeeding, right? We've all known people like that, or we've at least seen them in the public eye, because they tend to be kind of up there. Mm-hmm. How about social gain? Yeah. Yeah, it's a power agenda too. I'll give it that. Power, social gain and economic gain are kind of tied with each other, because a lot of times the social gain value system is, I don't know if I should call it lip service, but it is a public relations overlay on economic gain and power. You see this with politicians, right? We all have politicians, right? I know that this is a global show and we're in different countries and like that. But you see this with politicians. We have elections coming up in the United States. But this is true always. Politicians that are running for an office, which is power, right, and economic gain, because it pays well and their stuff, right, will say all kinds of social gain, moral value stuff so they can get in and be powerful and have good stuff. And maybe when they're there, they will indeed do some social gain, not so much because it's their value system, because their value system is to get in, but because they perceive that their constituents, that is their value system, especially in a democratic society. We do voting. Now, this is actually true of pretty much all people that rule nowadays, because the Internet exists. They have at least a nod towards morality and social gain, right? We're going to talk about morality next. And, yes, and a lot of that's a good point, too. A lot of times the social gain is also because they want to go into collaboration with an organization or someone else who's already set up the mechanism for whatever it is that they're trying to say that they're doing, right? But it needs funding. Hey, funding good, economic gain, right? Yeah, so they go hand in hand usually. It's not a bad idea, but you have to think about what comes first. What's the primary? Mm-hmm. It goes to moral and religious value teaching. A lot of you are going for religious teaching and whether or not that gives you your morality. Yes-ish. A lot of us are kind of religious. I'm rather religious, and it does give me a moral basis. I actually do think about my morals and how things fit in. My experience has been that the best part about value systems that are moral and religious based are usually because it gives a community value system in interpretation. It gives you other people who share these ideals so that you can really come together and do some good, right? Yeah. Moral and religious. Mm-hmm. I suppose this is true. Several people, Margaret and others, are talking about historical memory. How it is that you're supposed to react, because that's how people are supposed to react. That's peer pressure and community pressure. And it's also historical memory. What your response should be in a certain situation. Historical memory, right? Mm-hmm. It's also learned versus experienced. When you are youngish, you have learned a lot of historical memory, community values, and like that. But you have not actually put them into play. You've not experienced how they work in the real world. So your experiences change, well, modify at least, how you interpret historical and moral and religious values, your historical memory, how you interpret it so that it works, so that you can use it as a guide to your daily life, right? Yeah. Which leads us to the next topic, which is success-driven value systems, right? That is not necessarily the same as economic. It depends if your value system values success in terms of money, in terms of stuff, right? So you need to define what success looks like. You need to define what success is so that we can decide if it's money, if it is a goal that needs to be achieved, if it's change, might be status quo. You might be on the side that says, look, there's a movement to change, but we like the way things are. Because we usually think of success-driven as driven towards changing. It might be driven towards the past. It might be driven towards historical memory. It might be driven towards this is working. Let's keep it and not throw it out. Even though there's a movement to change, we disagree. We think it's good, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, to a great extent, success-driven is defined by who defines the success, right? Yeah. And you have to think about that too. Because sometimes the employer defines success. And you need to know how they're doing, what they think that is, before you take on this project of leading. And they need to understand that as the process goes forward, things might modify. As the process goes forward, things might modify. Right? Yeah. And that's a good thing when things modify. It's not a bad thing. It just means that we're having progress. It means that we are thinking. It means that we are going forward, right? Right. So you need to find out how we're defining success within the parameters of it might change. It might be, it's fluid, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Might be the participants. To a certain extent, it might be the media, because the media creates public opinion. And public opinion, if it's that kind of issues, might be very paramount to what we do. I'm going to take a sip of water. Hang on. Pardon me. So public opinion might define success, right? Yeah. Yes. And circumstances sometimes define success, and everyone has to understand that. You have to look and see if circumstances have changed. This is maybe the last time we tried this, right? Yeah. People are asking for an example. In the United States, we tried, well, you can see that I'm biased, but It was tried for many years to legalize marijuana. It is federally illegal. It's a big deal. And it was, well, I don't like to deem things hopeless, but it was tried a real lot. And to get the federal government to change, as in Congress people, to undo an actual law about drugs, complicated, difficult. You had to have a lot of votes from states, from people who represented areas that voted for them, who are highly conservative, and they didn't think their voters would like it, which means they're going to lose their job. Nobody wants to lose their fancy political job, right? Right. Excuse me. Thank you. People say, bless you. Thank you. Oh, my. So, the people who, the organizations, the individuals, everybody who wanted to have legalization, at least for medical, had to do something unusual. They actually did voting in the states for state laws that counteracted federal law. Very, very adventurous. But what it did was it told the people in Congress that many people who were voters in the states, because a lot of states have now legalized, are in favor of legalizing marijuana, at least for medical. And so it sent a message, is what it did. But also, it made money. There's just a ton of taxes that get made, and politicians love taxes. Who spends taxes? Politicians. They get to waste billions. I mean, they get to spend billions on important things. Billions with a B, right? It's big business. And they didn't think about that. Now they're all little greedy little hands are all shaking. And now it's still federally illegal, but it's getting closer. And the federal government has not been enforcing the federal law that says it is illegal to sell or purchase marijuana. It's done in shops. I mean, it's not like it's being hidden anymore. You go into a nice little shop on the street corner, a storefront, and you show an ID to show that you're old enough, and you have to pay cash, because at least in my state you do. But you just walk in and you say, I would like to purchase this marijuana product, please. And it's all on display, and they have lovely clerks who help you decide which one you want. And like that, yes, it's like buying clothes or a boutique or something. It's not weird, or you don't have to do something odd or deal with somebody in the corner with a baggie. It smells like oregano. Any questions? No. So circumstances changed. Ideas changed, right? Right. Mm-hmm. All of this, well, we have like 3 minutes, so we're going to get to the empathy part. And the peer pressure, because that makes circumstances change too, right? Yeah, peer pressure, voter pressure, circumstances pressure, maybe funding pressure. Mm-hmm. All of this needs some empathy on all sides, because we've got diverse value systems in the same room. Some of us can be there for social gain, some because we want economic gain or power. Hey, that's good. Media reputation. We all need to come together and understand that what we really want is the same outcome. We just want it for different reasons, right? Yeah. Because you don't necessarily need to change value systems. You need to understand what's at play and make everyone understand that we're all on the same team. We're all in the same corner. It's all going to work out just fine, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So we need some empathy, because empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. understanding, not necessarily agreement. Yes, and in order to gain that understanding, we're going to break out the 5W questions. They are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Because we want to know the answers so we can understand the basis for the value system and whether it's that different than ours, right? Yeah. Who, what, where, when, and why. Let's think about all of those. Who, what, where, when, and why. Yeah. The basis for the value system. My friends, we are nearly out of time. Yes. We did not get to the recipes, and I apologize. We'll see if we can try to get to them next time. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.